Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
Seeing my family on TV, seeing them sing, a bit teary. Yeah, nothing but love.
I have no regrets.
The people from the bush are real people. They're just wonderful people.
At a certain time of the afternoon, all these galahs come past and it's just beautiful.
If you've got time, pay Ningen a visit. Like, it's a great spot and we'd love to see you.
Yes. But Warren, it's just home. It's a beautiful little town.
I love Canamba because I'm here.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
This is Outback Out Loud Canamba.
He's reigning Canamba rodeo champ, Nathan Burtonshaw, and his wife, Kaylee.
I'm from a small town in Texas, USA. His name's Benjamin. There's about 100 people in it. It's pretty tiny. So I just grew up around ranches and horses. I met Nathan over in Texas, and then we just started dating, and we got married, and now here we are. Their place out, like where we have all of our horses and everything. It's nice, peaceful. You got horses around, cattle. You've got parrots everywhere, which we don't have at home. Kangaroos, all that. It's a bit of a different sight. Their place is just a block of land. At the moment, we're building a facility. Arena and all that, and then later on there'll be a house put on it, but right now we're just staying in town for the moment. I rode cutting horses for the last 14 years, so probably 5 or 6 years ago I came over, but I was down in Victoria and spent 3 months with a couple that trained cutting horses down there. It's a type of performance horse that involves cattle, so like you have a herd of cattle and you sort one out, and you have a time frame of 2.5 minutes, and you have to hold 3 cows. So you cut one out, and you hold it for a certain period of time, and then you go back in and get another one, and so your 2.5 minutes are up, and they judge you based on your style and performance of your animal, being able to control the cow. That industry's been going on for about 60 years, I believe. It got started in Texas. So yeah, I want to pass it down to my kids and stuff, like, because I love it, and I spent half my life doing it, so it's pretty important to me.
I grew up here in Canamba, same deal. We always rode horses and went through pony club and played junior sports here in town and played football for Canamba Bears, and we were quite fortunate to have parents like Mum and Dad that tried their best to let us play football and all sorts of, mainly all sports. I went to St. Bridget's School just down the road. Went to high school to year 10 and then left year 10 and then went on to do a welding trade with my dad in town. He's actually got a business, a local business in town. He's a welder over there in Railway Street. I always knew I wanted to ride bulls more than play football, I guess, because I was probably better at riding bulls than football. That's what Dad did, so I sort of kind of always wanted to be a bull rider or a cowboy, so to speak, and started at an early age. I started riding calves and stuff like that over in the backyard. An older guy here in town, Mitchell White, he used to ride bulls, so we used to go over there and he'd buck out every Wednesday and practice. And then I started to get a little bit better each day, and all of a sudden it went on, you know, to win, you know, Australian junior titles in the calf riding and then on the steer riding and winning Australian junior titles in that, and then junior bull riding and novice bull riding, and then all of a sudden I was onto the big boys and in the open bull riding, and then it just went on and it just led to the next minute we were in Vegas at the World Finals and got to go there, two trips to the World Finals, and then got to represent Australia at the Global Cup, ride for my country, and represented New South Wales several times. We were just at Brisbane on the weekend for the Origin in the PBR. We got beat, but that's just part of it, I guess. And I don't think that I probably would have changed it for anything. I'm 28 now, and it's a little later on in my career, but it's just, I can't express or say, give me any words on where it's taken me and how it got me out of the 50k zones of Canamble, really. I don't think there's many states in America that I haven't been. I've been to Canada, from New York, Madison Square Garden to Staples Center, just every weekend riding bulls. And I don't think that I would probably change it. It's been great, it's been a ride. I really can't believe, to be honest, you know, it's past my expectations of where a sport could actually take someone. You know, I just had goals of becoming good at what I did, you know, and that was just in Australia. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's taken me to places with riding against guys that I watched on TV at 10 years of age, and you're walking in the dressing rooms with them. And yeah, so it's been a blast, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Next, John shares his experience growing up out west around Walgett, Brawan and Canamble.
Well, my name's John, but my name's William John McBride, but I get called John, so, because my dad had the same name and everything. Well, we came down here in, I think, 1964 from Walgett. As a kid, I remember we used to grow up around Walgett fishing and doing whatever, but we'd also used to go down to the apple fields and stay out there for a year or so on my dad's mind. And it was great out there. Went through the bush looking for, you call it bush tucker, we just call it food. And mainly tubers, yams, and the wild fruits. Back then, out that way, there wasn't there was the odd feral pig and the odd feral rabbit, but you know, whatever. So we mainly just ate out of the bush, and mainly they were opening up old mines that had been there since the early 1900s. Like they'd open them up, and because the old miners they didn't bring the dirt out of the mines, they used to pull it away and stow it, and then just keep going like that. But they missed a lot of apple. And so when they got windlass, they could go down, clear out a mine, go down and bring all that dirt out and go through it all and find apples that had been missed. And then once you got it all out, then you started on the maiden ground that hadn't been touched. And it went like that. And so if we got some apples, we'd take them into Lightning Ridge and sell them on the back of this old Morris commercial truck. It'd take probably 3 or 4 hours and on an old bush track, you know. Get in there and sell the apple, buy some food. Look, they had relatives everywhere with the Aboriginal people, so they've got relatives in Walgett, over the border, Lightning Ridge, the apple fields where we lived was called the Grawan. And we used to go down the mines, you know, with parents. Sometimes we'd sneak down on our own. It was dangerous, and we'd get a bit of a clap up the ear over it, because you could have got killed doing it. Everyone was sort of happy out there, you know, like, we just run around and did whatever. We were too young to do. When we got a bit older, we had to start doing correspondence. Otherwise, you got taken, you know. And we didn't start that till we came over here, because we was quite young. And but no, Mum liked it out there. It looks, this is all Waywan country. This is my mother's country and my grandmother's country. Gamilaroi. I was born in Walgett, but apparently I'm not a real Gamilaroi lad because I've got no blood connections from there. I've got blood connections further up north, Cooma at my grandmother's country, and around here, my mum and grandfather's country. When my mother was young, in Gullagumbone, she was actually teaching, like, kindergarten students on the mission there. You know, and because the white teachers and that they were bringing in, there was some weird things going on. I remember Mum once telling me about this one teacher. She was deaf. And when she talked to the Aboriginal children, she'd abuse them, saying they were deaf and this and that. But she was the one who had the hearing problem. They couldn't hear her. They couldn't understand her. You know, and blackfellas got their own way of talking, especially broken English sort of thing. And they couldn't speak language. We weren't allowed to speak language. We weren't allowed to be taught dance, language, anything about our culture. Otherwise, we were taken. And so out there, no, Mum was a good teacher. We had to do it all by the book. Before I could get the bus back to town to go to school, we moved back to town. Started school, and this is quite embarrassing. They put me in kindergarten. I think I was about 7 or 8 years old, and oh, gee, I'll tell you what. And after 3 days, when they found out what the education that we had, I went straight to third class out of kindergarten. Oh, whew, thank goodness for that. Oh, there was a little place over here on the cut, and they called it a camping ground, but it wasn't a camping ground. It was more or less a mission, although they didn't have a mission manager, but... And that was Magra, they're right on the river. I was born on the river in Walgett and moved to the river and made my day. Just sat back there, back on there at 10 o'clock at night. Like, I noticed that the coppers had... They did have laws for whites and blacks, different laws, you know, but you got over that. The vagrancy law was in then, like, if they got one, say, an adult, without 30 or 40 cents in their pocket, they got charged with vagrancy. That's a joke. Midterm examinations, I left after that because my grandmother passed away and I had to go down to Sydney. I didn't have to, but I went down to Sydney with a couple of my sisters to get some other sisters to come home for the funeral. And then after that, I decided to leave school because I was a bit too far behind. I got offered an apprenticeship by the headmaster in the high school here in Coonamble, and knocked that back and started working sawmills and fencing and just doing whatever. Helped me mum out, helped me parents out. Over in Wee War, there's cotton chipping. And I didn't know at the time that when you went cotton chipping, you chipped out the weeds. I thought you chipped out the cotton. 11 years old, bang, bang, I'm cutting the cotton. What are you doing? Just cut out the weeds. So what do they call it, cotton chipping then, you know? And I was 11 and everyone was getting the same money at the time, men, women and children. You worked 10 hours a day, you got $10 a day. And that's in about 120 degree heat. You know, it's like on cotton fields. I'd take $2 and give me dad $8. But at that time, I was allowed to live along the Namoi River, all over the place, wherever you wanted to camp. And then they brought in that the blacks all had to live in on one spot. And I used to travel back and forth on the weekends, come home, see the family, give mum the money, and go back over. I was pretty keen, meeting a lot of people over there, you know. And they come all over, different blacks from all around. When they started moving blackfellas around, they intentionally just moved them everywhere. Took them to the wrong clans, took them to the wrong countries. They didn't care. You know, I learned all that afterwards. Even here in Coonamble, like, so we come from that way. Mum come up from that way. And there were people from all over Condable and Burke, all around, you know. They deliberately, like, split them up. And the old man ended up buying a place here. He got on the council and made a couple of good friends. He ended up buying a place. That's still the old place I'm living in now, and it's not far from the river, so I'm happy with that. I'm a mad fisherman. My mother's country, my grandfather's country, and country means a lot to us.
My favourite thing to do is probably ride my horses and do some cattle work.
Nice.
My favourite place in Coonamble would be... That's probably my pops.
I think my favourite place is definitely on the showground because there's a heap of room there to run around and play hide and seek and that.
What is your favourite place?
In Coonamble it would probably be... Yeah, maybe the football oval. My favourite things to do would be going out on the bikes and riding them around.
My most favourite thing about Coonamble would probably be, well, a lot of the people I know, they're nice and they care.
What is your favourite thing to do out of school?
Fishing. I like to go fishing. I feel good when I do it. It's fun.
What is your favourite place in camp?
It'd probably be my big backyard tree. At a certain time of the afternoon, all these galahs come past and it's just beautiful.
This is Rainey King talking about the role of art in her life.
My name is Rainey King, and we're at the Ceramic Studio in Canamble. I wasn't born in Canamble, I was born in Sydney, but I was raised from a baby in Canamble. Moved away, going to uni and teaching and working and raising my kids, and then eventually came back home in 2012. When I came home, obviously I was a lot older and a little bit more wiser. I guess when I came home, I realised that there are so many special places so close to us, like the Pilliga Forest and like the Macquarie Marshes out at Yinquambone, you know, like they're just right there at our doorstep. But as a kid growing up, like you knew of these places, but didn't really truly appreciate the significance and the importance of those places, both culturally and, you know, in their natural forms and everything else they offer, like to the bird life and nature and everything else like that. I can't remember a time that I never had some sort of art, craft, paint, drawing, something. Like, it was always something. Art and drawing and painting and things like that, for me, it was like an escape from the shitty stuff that was going on in my life. I could just, you know, find myself immersed in something else and everything. I forgot about everything else. And the one significant thing that it actually brings a smile to my face. So back when I was a little girl, there was, I think it might have been at Toy World or somewhere, I saw this, like a caddy, and it spun around and it had pencils on one side and crayons on the other side and like little paint pots and all this, like, and I saw it and I just, it was like, you know, Willy Wonka's golden ticket. So it was like this amazing thing. Anyway, I got it for Christmas. It was like my most prized possession ever. And I think it was too pretty. I don't even actually remember using the pencils or the paint because I didn't want to ruin it. Like, I just wanted it to keep it beautiful the way it was forever and ever. I also had and still have this hunger for learning. YouTube is my best friend. Like, I just absolutely love it because I'll think about something. And I wonder how they make that. I wonder how they do that. So it's just this, like, really curious mind that I just, you know, I'm a real DIY person and do things myself. I learned how to restore furniture and, you know, and then I learned how to sew. Like, I actually asked my mum and my auntie. They weren't great seamstresses, but they knew how to use a sewing machine, so I got them to teach me everything they knew in love photography. But I wanted to do some formal training. So for 2 years, I travelled to Mudgee every second Saturday, 3 hours over there, 6 hour day, 3 hours home, every second Saturday for 2 years, just to do it, because that's where I had to go to do it. And then so along the way, ceramics has also then come into it, and then I did a bit of scrapbooking, and like, so there's all these different things that along the way, since I was a little girl, I've just constantly just added on. Like I said, come full circle, I come home, started teaching at the high school, found out about the little group that were doing their little, and I'm like, you know, I really want to do this because I've been saying this for years, it's what I'm going to do. And again, I immersed myself in whatever opportunity I could. Like, I chased these opportunities to learn. But because I was teaching full time, I couldn't really throw myself into it like fully. So I was sort of like dabbling. We started coming up here on a Thursday night, and it sort of just progressed from there slowly. But since I've been off work this time, and I've had some real struggles with my mental health because of work-related things, the new wave, I'll call it, of ceramics has come out of the darkness, I guess, for me. Even though I did it before, I never had the time to really immerse myself in it. Even though I knew that it was really good for my mental health prior, I didn't realise how important it would be for me. I sort of knew I needed a space. I needed a space for me. And so I sort of basically put dibs on that shed over there. I thought, that's my shed. Don't put any stuff in there. Been a collector for a long time. I collected a lot of stuff. So I was able to move into that shed with the studio set up. Didn't have to go and buy a thing, I had it all. It was just a matter of creating that space, putting it where I wanted to put it. And so slowly I started to just get up and I'd make a coffee and I'd walk out the back. I'd go and sit in my shed and I'd start to make things. And it started off with a little ball of clay and I was just making pinch pots. And that's all that started. And it was like, okay, I'm starting to like get my creative juices were starting to flow slowly. I'd become quite a hermit over there, and you know, I wouldn't see anyone for weeks, and Stan would go to the shop and I wouldn't see anyone. So my little shed became my safe haven. I know I started to reconnect with my family heritage as well. Like, I was adopted. Well, not legally adopted, but so my biological mother was very, very, very young, like 13 when she had me. So, and I was the only one that was given away. Like, I've got a sister and two younger brothers, like, from the same mother. But so I sort of reconnected a little bit with that as well, and like our family side of things, and like culturally just trying to reconnect with that too and put that in my artworks, I guess, and you know, sort of the two sort of things. So it sort of just morphed into itself. It just sort of grew from a little pinch pot, and I just started doing it, you know, like, and I just started making some stuff. And then I went over to Imagi because my sister needed me to do some product photography, and she sort of said to me, Rani, why don't you make it, because she knew that I wasn't in a good spot. She said, why can you make me some stuff for my cafe? So I made some pots, and then I made a few little coolamans, and she said, oh man, they're awesome, can you make me some more? And so I, you know, righto, so I just started making them for her. She said, I've sold them all, you need to make me some more. And I, holy shit, you know, that's it there. And it was good because she kept pushing me to make stuff, and it just got me out of that, off the lounge. And then the more I made, I guess the better I got. And then I started to experiment with different ways and forms and colours, and I actually started to look at the country that is around me, like the marshes and the Warrumbungles and the Castlereagh River, you know, like our surrounding natural environment. So, and that's when I was talking to you before about special places around here, like when you're younger, you don't realise they're there. And now that I'm older and I appreciate it, I'm appreciating them more, and I'm actually including them in my artworks. So for me, like a coolerman is very significant to women, Aboriginal women, you know, and their carriages, you know, for their babies and their food and water and stuff like that. But then to be able to put my environment, it's just been a form of release for me, I guess, and just that creative, you know, it's something I've always done, but it's actually helped in my healing. Like, so through that, I've sort of been on my journey of healing, I guess, through it, and it's helped me a lot.
Canamble has a stunning main street. It's changed a lot over the years. Here's some chats with past and current shop owners about their businesses.
Yeah, my name's Len Scott. I've been in Canamble for 64 years. I'm a family of seven kids and mum and dad. We purchased a butcher shop over the West Canamble. We were only going to stay here 3 years because mum and dad went up to Toowoomba and bought a butcher shop and a house up there. They paid the deposit and we lost the lot because none of us kids had moved. So we stayed here. We used to send our meat to Adelaide, Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. We were the second largest wholesalers of meat to Coles. We would send at least one truck a day with 100 cattle to Coles. But Canamble's been good to us. My father used to always say, if you fellas want to find somebody who wants to work, hop in the car at 5 o'clock in the morning, winter time, drive around and see who's got the lights on. The chap that owns the butcher shop in the main street, Joe Belgard, Joe used to come from school, 3:30, around there, wash up, and he's been there ever since.
Joseph Carl Belgar lived in Canamble for 68 years. And I am the local butcher. I did work in the butcher shop for a local company for about 43 years, and when that company broke up 20 years ago, I purchased the business. So I was half a handy football player, and I was going to go away playing football. Had these big dreams about going away, and my father insisted, no, you must get a trade. So I did an apprenticeship, and I've never left the town since. A big part of the business is you, the person, not the business itself. It's you, the person, and you can attract. I know that ITA probably sells cheaper meat than I do, but I have the clientele because they come and want to go to Joe's to buy their meat.
My name is June Bergen and I come from Coonamble. And I've been here ever since I was 11. I was 15, I was allowed to leave school when I was 15 because I started working at Monterey Cafe and I was a waitress there. It was a big cafe and it's in the main street of Coonamble. And I was one of three waitresses. Well, this was the main cafe for meals. And like steak and chops or sausages, mince and things like that they used to serve. They used to serve the soda drinks in the fountain. They had a fountain there and they or any sort of juices they had with an ice cream in it. At times we used, when we wasn't busy, we used to have to go behind the counter and serve up the ice creams, or people have sandwiches, we make them for them. But I'd never move from here. I think this is where I'd stay.
Yes, it's Helen. My name's Stan Leonard. I'll be 89 next Monday. My father started Leonard's Store. It was a boot repairing and manufacturing business and retailing in 1914. A war was on and my three older brothers were in the call-up, and my eldest brother Frank was killed in New Guinea. My dear old dad got the news his firstborn was killed. It knocked the socks out of him and I was called home to try and keep the doors open. So that was at 16. We were manufacturing a elastic-sided boot for the drovers. They depended on their horse and on their boots to get them through a driving trip, which might take 2 years at times. And the Leonard's boots were known along the drover's track from New South Wales to Queensland, and they'd last the 2 years out, no problems. And it developed slowly but surely, and we got up to a small manufacturing, which we produced up to 90 pairs a week. I went from footwear into mixed clothing business over the years, but we're still going okay. We know our business and we cater for the outback and for people, and yeah, no, it's a good place, Coonamble. It's got a heart and a soul.
We were sitting across at Somo's Takeaway at the time and spotted the sign there that it was for sale. By the time we left that weekend, the business was renamed and then I fought actually coming back for probably about 3 or 4 months, but it was 3 or 4 months of hell at my prison job, so I finally agreed and we purchased Somo's and turned it into CJ's and haven't looked back since. We thought we were buying a quiet little cafe. However, it turns out it's primarily a pie shop. So in peak season, which is the colder months of the year, it's anything up to 30 dozen pies a day. So I went from, I don't know, working probably 8 hours on average a day to working 12 to 15 hours a day. So, but it's our business, so. So we make the actual ingredients to cook the meat. We buy all our produce locally as much as we can, as far as the meat and the vegetables and all that. And our meat is slow cooked for probably about 6 hours. Then we turn that in, add all the secret herbs and spices. So sorry, KFC. Then we also make our pie-based pastry as well. And then we'll make the pies during the course of the day. Somo actually taught us how to do it, and Fluffy taught him. And Fluffy has since come in and tweaked a few things, and then we've changed a few recipes and gone from there. You know, you walk down the street and you literally know people, like you've known them all your life. So that I find really comforting, whereas you don't get that in a big city. So yeah, that's probably the best thing I found about moving back.
Brian Somerville. I've got a shop in the main street. I bought the bus run and a toy shop, Toy World, at the same time. Opened up a shop in the corner of Somo's Spice Shop and sold that. Yeah, love Coonamble. Even strangers walking down the street, I mean, you don't have to stay for a conversation. Just walk past and say, how are you going? People like to talk. you know, like ask them where they're going and all that sort of stuff. And there's a lot of people leave from Campbell and go to bigger towns, but they all come back.
Pam Toomey from Pilliga. My mum and dad lived on the mission in Pilliga, about 6 or 7 miles out. And then they moved into town, and I think they were the first family to get a house in Pilliga. We lived there too. Our dad was a shearer. Mum just cleaned the school. And then we moved to Wee Waa. And Dad got a job at the cotton gin. And yeah, he did all the farm work on the cotton. I'd drive the tractors, and yeah, it was good. Dad always came home on Fridays with his check and give it to Mum. And everybody else used to drink all this. But Mum would growl if he wouldn't. So he'd always, even if he was drunk, he'd still come home with the paycheck. He was a good man, good hard working man. I miss him though. Oh, I love Canamble. I don't know why, but he wants to move back to Pilliga, but I won't move. I said, you can go, I'll stay here.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.